It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Wisconsin's Department of Transportation is moving forward with rebuilding part of Interstate 94 that runs through Milwaukee's west side. But as Jonah Chester reports, community members, environmentalists worry the project could undo years of efforts to clean up the Menominee River and safeguard neighborhoods along the expressway from flooding.
So what are we going to be doing here today?
We are watering.
We are watering the plant?
Yes.
It's community cleanup night at Milwaukee's Valley Park, and Ann Bowie is trying to wrangle about a half a dozen neighborhood kids. She's assigning them jobs for the evening. Some get mulching duty, some are in charge of watering the flowers. And she also deals with the occasional labor dispute. West of Valley Park runs the Menominee River. To its east is the valley, also known as Pigsville. And Interstate 94 forms the southern border of the neighborhood. Many Valley residents have lived in the shadow of the highway since this stretch of the road was built in 1963. Now the Wisconsin Department of Transportation plans to add two lanes to a 3.5-mile segment of the highway, and the valley falls right in the middle of that project. Bowie and her neighbors worry that expanding the road could disrupt their lives and pollute their community.
Look at these kids. There's like a 3-foot child there with a lung system that is already fragile and already probably compromised from living in houses with lead dust. So it's bad enough that we have the freeways that we have here, but why are we going to spend, 5 years probably building more?
The expansion of I-94 will add about 29 acres of asphalt to the road. That's more than 20 football fields worth of land that will no longer be able to absorb water. Neighborhoods along the highway, and especially those that are near the Menominee, have struggled with flooding in the past. Valley Park was actually built in the early 2000s to protect nearby homes when the Menominee floods. And residents say it's worked. Peggy Falsetti recalls a time when children would play in standing water when the Menominee River surged over its banks.
And things used to be different. I mean, I remember waking up one morning and the water was all the way up to 39th Street.
But other neighborhoods aren't as lucky. Many neighborhoods south of I-94 near the Menominee still face a high flood risk during severe storms. More households in those neighborhoods also face challenges like having older homes and lacking health insurance, things that make recovering from flooding harder. The State Transportation Department says expanding the road will increase runoff, but officials won't develop a plan to address that until the final planning stages. Cheryl Nen is with the Milwaukee Riverkeeper. She says their approach won't allow for community input.
There's been a lot of, really serious work to deal with flood management in the watershed, and that work continues. This type of a project, is going to make it harder for us to achieve our goals for clean rivers.
Milwaukee has its own rules for planning to minimize runoff in a project's early stages. But as a state agency, Nen says the Department of Transportation isn't bound by those rules.
It is frustrating because they acknowledge there's pollution. They acknowledge that there's a litany of different things they can do to minimize that or ameliorate those impacts, but they don't commit to anything.
The Wisconsin Department of Transportation declined an interview for this story. In an email, a department spokesperson said they try to minimize environmental impacts in all of their projects. Back at the Valley Park cleanup, Janet Haas says she's worried about how the expansion will impact the park. The community puts a lot of work into maintaining it, and residents think of it as the heart of the neighborhood.
Who is going to benefit? Because it's not going to be us. The soil is going to be crummier, more polluted. We worked on this park. Why should we give it back?
Haas says expanding the interstate closer to the park could undo all of their work. Jonah Chester, Wisconsin Public Radio.
If you can please...
It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Night sky watchers get a second chance this month to view a supermoon, the closest and brightest moon of the year. As the blue moon rises at the end of the month, call in with your question and comments, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Gene Creighton is director of the Manfred Olson Planetarium at UW-Milwaukee. Gene, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. It's wonderful to be with you.
Good morning. So we're halfway through a streak of 4 supermoons in a row. Up next is the blue supermoon. How often does Wisconsin see a chain of supermoons like this?
It's not very common, but I mean, I think it's useful to realize what this all means, right? What is a supermoon?
So the average, and I have to talk a little bit of numbers just to give context, the average distance between the moon and the Earth is about 238,000 miles. But that plays because the orbit of the moon isn't exactly circular. So at its closest, it can be 15,000 miles closer or farther than that, which means that when we say supermoon, the moon is like 6-7% closer than average, which makes it look bigger and brighter.
Aha.
And the brighter is even more pronounced, right? Because the brightness is like double, the effect is double because you have a full circle. So it can be up to 16% brighter.
So why is it blue when it doesn't look blue? Why is it called a blue supermoon?
That is an obvious question. Thank you for asking. Because as you point out, if anything, it's going to be red, not blue. So I'm not sure why blue is considered the strange color, but maybe because it really is a color that doesn't happen. The moon is called blue when it's the second full moon in a month, mm-hmm. or the fourth full moon in a season. So it has nothing to do with color, if you will, but it's just a way of saying it's rare. Mm-hmm. But even that, a blue moon happens every few years, 2-3 years.
What?
If you think about it, that's not surprising given that months are 30 days, 31 even sometimes, and the moon's period is like 29 days. So we squeeze in sometimes a second one.
What excites astronomers like you about supermoons, may I ask?
Anything that makes the public look up and say, "Ooh, that's a cool moon." Anything that makes people sort of connect with that, with the bigger cosmos, I think is very worthwhile.
What might a supermoon look like through the telescopes in your planetarium? I mean, what does that supermoon look like from your glimpse in the planetarium?
So the planetarium is indoors, and that moon is actually a fixed projector. Mm. The observatory, so if you look through a telescope, the fact of the matter is that a full moon is not the best moon to look at.
Okay.
And that's because with a telescope, because it's so bright, it's almost blinding. Like the telescope doesn't help you. So a full moon, I think, is best enjoyed without, you know, you don't need help with a full moon as beautiful as it is. A pair of binoculars is fine, but frankly, the best moon to look at would be a first quarter or even a crescent. And that's because you have better defined craters. So a moon like that can be really gorgeous, breathtaking, because it feels like it's so close. The sun's rays hit it at an angle, so you get some shadows and better contrast. So what you're looking at is more interesting visually, as opposed to a full moon, which is just a big, bright thing that's a little blinding.
Beautiful, bright, yes. Well, let's turn our attention to meteor showers. The Perseids peaked last weekend. How long does the meteor shower typically last?
This one is a good one, because it goes on for a few weeks, actually. So we can easily see more shooting stars in the next 5 or 6 days. And what's cool about that is we can predict when we're going to see these meteor showers, because it's when the Earth goes through the orbit of a comet. And patient people, you need to be a little patient. You can see sometimes dozens an hour if you have a good horizon, like a big horizon, especially to the east.
Are there, you know, what causes the meteors that make up the Perseids?
Yeah, so we go through the orbit of a comet called Tuttle. Mm-hmm. And what happens here is that the debris, because a comet leaves behind, you can think of them as breadcrumbs, those little pieces of rock or ice or some combination of both hits the atmosphere at about 40,000 miles an hour. And that is so fast that it experiences enough friction while it travels through the atmosphere where it slams in that it makes the air around it glow. And we see those quick streaks of light. And as I said, this particular meteor shower, we can get dozens an hour, whereas any time you can get just random meteors, you can get about five an hour.
Hmm.
But this is more spectacular.
Besides the Perseids, are there a lot of those debris fields out there?
There are, but you know what? In Wisconsin, this is by far and away the best.
Okay.
Because it's the time of year where the weather tends to be somewhat stable, and it's pleasant to be outside at nighttime looking at the sky for long periods of time. There are other ones in November, December, but those are not good times for us. So I think if you're going to invest a little bit of time to see meteors, this is probably your best chance.
We've been thinking about you in Wisconsin. We've been thinking about you with the air quality situation around Canadian wildfires and just wondering how does wildfire smoke affect the night sky visibility?
So it's interesting because, of course, air quality is a concern for our health. It can make objects dimmer because there's more stuff in the atmosphere to travel through, right?
More particles.
But in some ways, yeah, but in some ways there is a, I hate to say a bonus, but in some ways it is, that because of all the extra particles in the atmosphere, things can look redder. So the sun, for example, some sunrises and sunsets can be very dramatic because there can be times when the sun literally looks red, even when it's not, you know, on the horizon. We expect to see sunrises and sunsets to be red when the sun is really low in the sky. But if the atmosphere is packed with too many particles, then the sun can look bright red even when it's high in the sky. I don't know if you've noticed that, but I saw that several times, especially when the air quality was particularly bad.
Yes, and we saw and those pictures, yes, yeah, posted on social media as well. We have astrophysicist Gene Creighton, who is director of the Manfred Olson Planetarium at UW-Milwaukee, as we discuss stunning lunar displays this month. You can join the discussion along the way. Call in with a question or comment, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore supermoons as the moon nears its closest point to Earth, and we enjoy a big, bright lunar display again at the end of the month. You can be part of the conversation about the night sky. Call in with a question, a concern, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Gene Creighton is director of the Manfred Olson Planetarium at UW-Milwaukee and stays with us. Gene, UW-Milwaukee calling this year the Year of Space. Why is this year in particular significant?
Well, thanks for asking, Kate. Yeah, so we have some really fun astronomical events coming up. So we have two solar eclipses, and one is in on the 14th of October, and conveniently, it peaks at around noon local time on a Saturday. So, yay, everybody's out of school. and the weather, of course, is likely at that point to be good. So we're excited. We're excited about that opportunity. In fact, so much so that we we decided over a year ago now to buy 10,000 solar eclipse glasses so that we could provide the community with opportunities to see the eclipse safely. I mean, I think it's important to reiterate that although it's wonderful to observe these phenomena where strategically the moon comes between us and the sun, it is very important to have proper protection because, as I've been told, our eye doctors can tell if you've been looking at the sun.
How long?
Because you're ready.
Yes.
Your retina gets damaged. Yeah.
So on the 14th, of October, how long will people in Wisconsin be able to experience this eclipse? What might it be like?
Well, it is a partial and annular eclipse. So annular, remember how we talked about the distance of the moon changes over a period of time. If the moon is close to us, then it is big enough to cover the sun. But if it's at its farthest or farther away from average, then it looks smaller. So it's not quite able to cover the sun entirely. So even people who get to see the full extent of the eclipse, it's still an annular eclipse. So there'll be a little ring of the sun still uncovered. Definitely need eclipse glasses. So we will be providing them on the day. So everyone is welcome to come to UWM. Our event will begin at 11 o'clock on October 14th. And as we discussed before, I'd be very happy to talk about that closer to the time.
Sure, sure.
Second eclipse.
Oh, yes, go ahead with the second eclipse.
Uh-huh. It's on April 8th. And to get two eclipses in the same school year is truly unheard of. I mean, lunar eclipses happen reasonably often, but solar eclipses are truly hard to come by. Again, we're not in what's called a path of fatality, so we're not going to get to see a total eclipse. But I think that even a partial eclipse is cool. It is a Monday morning, so we're calling it an eclipse breakfast. Mm-hmm. And we're hoping that our community will be able to kind of nip in and be able to take a look at the eclipse and maybe get some breakfast.
People do, make these, plan these eclipse trips. And I'm just wondering for the October one, what might be the best viewing location to travel to in the U.S. to see it?
So it's peaking south of us.
Okay.
So offhand, I would need to look at a map.
Sure.
But that's something that our listeners can easily get. If you just search for a path of totality for eclipse, it'll show you. The one is quite a bit further south from us. And the other one runs, I think, through Buffalo, like the April one. And I think places like Buffalo are getting a total eclipse in April. And you're right, some people do travel, but families, people who can't just pack up and leave when school is in session, we get what we get. We get a partial eclipse.
Talking with Jean Creighton, director of the Manfred Olson Planetarium at UW-Milwaukee. As we talk about astronomical events now and in the future, you can call in at 800-642-1234. Jean, in terms of the April eclipse, April 2024, NASA is planning to perform some experiments. What data can scientists get during a total eclipse that is otherwise unmeasurable?
Oh, yeah, great. So the sun is too bright, right? The sun, we talk about the different portions of the sun. So the part of the sun that's most visible to us is what we call the photosphere. And that's where light comes from. The word photos in Greek means light. But if you somehow were able to magically block that bright piece, then you see the eerie glow around the sun, which is called the chromosphere and the corona. Those areas of the sun are hard to study and they're really hard to understand. And that's because what's weird about them is that the sun at the edge, if you will, is about 6,000 degrees or so. But then instead of getting cooler as you get farther from the sun, within maybe, you know, a diameter of the sun distance or so, the temperature gets to a million degrees.
Mm.
And we're not quite sure what is making the corona, that outer, if you will, glow, that halo of the sun, what powers it? What makes it that hot? So there's scientists who are trying to understand, you know, how the various aspects, the sun is a very dynamic body, how does that all work? How does the package, and it's embarrassing in some ways that the star closest to us, it leads us in this kind of basic way.
Has mysteries that we just can't quite solve. I want to make sure in our just last moments together, you have an astronaut visiting campus in October as well. Is that right?
That is right. Mae Jemison, who is not just an astronaut, I mean, as if it's just an astronaut, but she's also an engineer and a medical doctor. Mae Jemison, the first African-American woman in space, is coming to give a distinguished lecture series talk about her experiences in space on October 10th.
Oh, great.
And we're very excited about that.
Well, Jean, happy sky gazing. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you so much for the lovely conversation.
Jean Creighton, director of UW-Milwaukee's Manfred Olson Planetarium. This is title track of Neil Young's 1992 hit album, Harvest Moon. Next Harvest Moon, September 29th. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.